We will award a brass figlegee with bronze oak leaf palm to any listener who will arise above and who can arise above and who has the talent to rise above and the guts to rise above ordinary listener muckdom. If you can tell me what it is that the Reverend Bob Richards is grinning about in those Wheaties commercials. There's a great word that I once learned back in the pool room that describes that kind of grin. Actually, it's several words. I wish that we could send it out to you. What is it that he's grinning about? Is it he's grinning about because he's got a sponsor? Oh, no, I expect one day to see the Reverend Richards pole vaulting into the pulpit, carrying a gigantic box of Wheaties with his gold medal around his neck there, you know. Oh, yes, didn't you know that? Oh, yes, Reverend, yeah, very good. Speaking of that, you know, of course, it's all part of our culture, our world culture here, the United States type. Wouldn't it be great? Don't you ever have a feeling listening to the Yankees, all of you Met fans? Don't you ever have a feeling that you'd like to hit the television set or hit the radio? And don't you ever have a feeling that you would like to see Mel Allen assigned to broadcast the Washington Senators games for about 3 years just to teach him reality, you know? about 3 years, I'd say, would do Mel a lot of good, I think. He'd learn a lot about baseball. He'd learn a little bit about life there. Well, speaking of that, as long as we're on the subject, don't you agree with me there? Don't you think a couple of years in Kansas City would do Mel a little good? That's right. A good eighth-place team, you know, that doesn't come up with that rally in the fourth inning that teach them a little bit about what baseball is about. Well, of course, I would like to see all the Yankee fans assigned to, let's say, St. Louis for about 3 or 4 years. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's part and parcel of our whole world. Hello, what is it that Richards is grinning about? No, I don't think so, because a lot of guys have got sponsors and they're not grinning. Something else. I don't know quite what it is. Has little to do with Wheaties, I can tell you that, because Wheaties don't make a grin like that. Now, if you had another kind of a sponsor, I can think of several things. They don't grin like that on the beer. Well, they do in a way, don't they, on those beer commercials. In fact, one of the best beer commercials I ever saw is the time one of the newscasters out in the Middle West started his commercial and fell off his seat. And it sold more beer than any beer commercial they'd done in years, because, you know, reality is something that you just can't fake, you know. He says, now it's time for it. And by George, he slipped right out of the frame there, and they heard a thump, and they heard the beer dripping all over the base. It just sold all that beer all over the place. It reminded them of what it was about, you know. They rushed out like mad. Did you see that cartoon by Didini? You know, Didini is a listener. And Didini has a cartoon. It's from the back of the television set. You're looking from behind the TV set this time, and you see these two people, you know, just fat people sitting there, you know, and looking at the TV set. There's a fat lady and a fat man, and they've both got this grim look on their face. And they're watching television, and their face is just lit by the color, you know, of the TV set. You can see the glow on their eyes. And the caption, the woman is saying to the man, well, it's a lot more real than our life. It's a lot more real than our life. Oh, by the way, how real is your life? Is there anybody out there who has a real life that he's living? I mean, you know, that's as real as, say, Rex Harrison's. I'm serious, friends. I mean, is your life as real as Elizabeth Taylor's? Of course not. You know that. Of course, this is one of the great differences, you know, that's happened in our time in the world of the theater, that there was a time, you know, when actors played us. Now, in our time, we play actors. Very different. More people base their life or their attitude and their hairdo and everything else on Elizabeth Taylor, you see, rather than Elizabeth Taylor in a role copying people. Very different. Very different. Oh, don't you see that there's a difference in there, honey? No, I guess it's too late. It's too late. The quicksand's got them. By the way, how long have you been in the quicksand out there, friend? Huh? How long do you think it'll take to get up to your... how long do you think it'll take? Huh? Is it rising there? Well, one thing about quicksand is that it's comfortable. It's usually, I've never heard of frozen quicksand. It's not cold, and it's kind of comfy in a way. Is anyone out there? Oh, speaking of that, last night, you know, we discussed the problem of setting up the audience, getting it all ready, getting things prepared. Now, one of the reasons you don't accept me as an official person is because, one thing, I'm on the radio. The radio itself is a slave instrument. It is totally up to your whim. You see, you can reach out and cut the thing off. Just turn it off like that, you see, just cut it. It's a slave instrument, and so hence you begin to feel that all the guys on it are your slaves. Oh, yes. That's a very subtle juxtaposition and transition there of responsibilities, but not quite the same. Now, hardly anybody thinks that the television set is his slave. Oh, no. Although there are those who do, nobody thinks the theater is his slave. In fact, it's the other way around. You see, the theater is a master medium rather than a slave medium. And so now, since it's Friday night, and we've got to set you up properly, is there anybody out there feels the desire, the urge to applaud when the act comes on? Well, of course, you all do, don't you? I mean, when Jerry Page shows up in the second act with the big thing, the big plume hat, you know, you want to applaud, don't you, friends? Fellow sufferers, you don't. Well, then you've got somebody else you applaud. Maybe it's Johnny Carson. You're a Johnny Carson type, I think. Yeah, you. Maybe it isn't Jerry Page. Maybe it's Sandra Dee. Maybe that's style there. But nevertheless, everyone feels a terrible urge to applaud. And unless they can applaud, there is a tension that builds up. An indefinable thing. A thing that can lead to all kinds of fistfights and troubles, and then finally you get disgusted and walk away. Speaking of that, before we go any further, I don't want anybody here to turn that girl thing on. You know what is it, the girl thing? Have you ever seen women turn the girl thing on? Well, look, they look dumbly as if they don't know. Well, you know, when there's trouble, all of a sudden they turn the girl thing on. You know what I mean? They become fantastically feminine. I've seen them in the office. You know, somebody yells at them, they cry. Well, can you imagine one of the guys in the mailroom crying when leader yells at him? Forget it. Down the shaft he goes. The elevator shaft, head first. Well, I mean, you know, and so women continually have a thing which they can retreat to in time of trouble, and that's femininity. Men cannot retreat into masculinity. So if Jack Beerbin says, Shepard, when are you going to get commercial? I can't walk around stroking my beard and, you know, hitting the wall and getting real masculine. Down the elevator shaft. Doesn't work. Peggy breaks into tears and starts talking about cats. And it gets her out of every hole all the time. Every time. You know, I've tried it on leader. I said, hey, Bob, you're talking Yankees. Phil Rizzuto. Nothing. He says, shut up. Get commercial. Nothing. Well, you know, it's a hard. You know what I'm talking about, the girl thing. You know, it's a terrible thing. I wish it was a giant studio audience. Speaking of giant studio audiences, I just want to know that there's one person who's willing to applaud. In which case, I will go on. No, I want to hear a loud applause. And is there one person out there in Queens or in Staten Island? Who will applaud? I want to hear the applause now. Come on, I'm waiting for the call. I will not go on until I get applauded. No, seriously. I saw an actress one time come out on the stage after a big entrance. There was no applause. You know what she did? Turned around and went back out the door. Stayed out there until they applauded. Then she came out and the play went on. And everybody loved her for it. Now, that's true. I remember one comic one time that I worked a show with. He came out, and I says, and now here he is. It's Charlie Watson, that funny man that all of you have been waiting for. Well, it would have been great if that happened. Nothing. They all sat on their hands. He came out, and he took one look at the crowd, and he says, all right, okay, I'm going. And he went out. He came back, they cheered, hey, Charlie. And he went on, and they all loved it. Now, if there's anybody willing to applaud, I'm willing to go on. If not, we've got some old John Gambling tapes that we'd love to play right now. I'll give you the time and those Strauss waltzes and, you know, all that stuff about the Westchester School announcement. You'd love to hear that, wouldn't you, at this hour? Fine. We've got some old, used L. and Dora McCann shows about frozen asparagus. Very good shows. Talk about frozen asparagus and the artichoke market. Very good. And we've got some stuff we could throw at you here. This isn't as bad as it could be, you know. Oh, no. We've got some. Is there an applauder there? Now, it better be legit. Hello? Hello? Yeah, now let's hear that applause, baby. Come on. Come on. Come on. Belt it. Oh, they're not here. You bring the gain up now. Come on, go for it. Belt it now, baby. Belt it. Oh, I want to hear it. Gee, that's good. That's kind of good. That warms the cockles there. Well, thank you very much. I will go on. Of course, I can tell it doesn't come from the heart. I can hear the Johnny Carson show in the background. Thank you. Yeah, I'm not alone, she says. Oh, boy. Boy, with that rotten union I've got, I might as well be. This is... it's funny how these word associations work. That reminds me. This is WOR, AM and FM, New York. Speaking of rotten things. And we'll be here until... It's late, you know, and it's Friday night, and nobody really cares one way or the other, certainly me. And we have, among other things, let's do a commercial here. What do you say, huh? Come on, give me a cheer here, come on. That's a way to set up a commercial. Yes, there's nothing but boffing, laughing, and yelling, hollering. Well, that crowd, that wonderful laughing, screaming crowd, bring it up again. I want to show them. This was recorded right on the spot. You hear that sound now? It's a very important sound. In just a moment, you will hear the door open, and you will hear them come out on the street. This was recorded by a special type of tape recorder, which is transistorized and operated under solar energy conditions. Listen carefully now. These people do not know that they are being heard. Hear that now? Hear that now? That's a group of people who are totally out of their skull. They have just come out of the Mandarin House. On 13th Street, between 6th and 7th, in the village. They did not believe that the food was as fantastic as I said it was, and now they are coming out. Listen, here again. Listen to that crowd. Insanely bombed out of their skull. If you haven't tried Mandarin food, I would like to suggest you go down there and take a good, strong woman with you. A good, strong woman, and be prepared for a genuine adventure. Literally, there's some things I would like to tell you about Mandarin food that I can't, but it's no coincidence that the population of China is gigantic. Most of them eat Mandarin food. And I would suggest that you go down to 13th Street between 6th and 7th and enjoy a fantastic Mandarin dinner over this weekend if you're coming in to make the New York scene. It's right in the heart of the village, and you'll find it's the village down there. They have a bar. And it's on 13th, as I said, between 6th and 7th. Now, seriously, though, if you've not tried Mandarin food, it's a gas. You know? Oh, listen to that crowd. Bring them up. Here they come. There comes another group out. That's another group. That's not the same. Hold it. There. Very good. It's very exciting, isn't it? Radio? This is Mandarin House, and there's also one up on 2nd Avenue just north of 57th Street. That's Mandarin East, and they're open on the weekend, and it's a great place to take the family, right? Right. Now, let's see. We have here the Golden World of Opera coming up tomorrow. It's Massenet's Werther, starring Suzanne. Well, anyway, there's an opera at 2 o'clock on WOR. It doesn't matter. They all sound pretty much the same. They all sing in that funny language and, you know, and yell and holler and all that. Now, you'll hear that tomorrow at 2. That's for the very serious people. Opera comes on. I wonder whether opera fans are serious. You know, they're, to me, that is the least music-loving crew that I've ever known. They love personalities more than they like music. Oh, yeah. I've never known an opera fan who really liked music. It's people he likes. Certain people, certain performers. That's another story. We don't want to go into that. But that's tomorrow, too, for all of you soreheads. Who are opera fans. They're not listening to us anyway. That's a different thing. They're tuned three or four notches down the dial. One of those serious FM stations, you know, that drone on and on and on and on. And those serious announcers, this is the Sirius Broadcasting Network coming to you on the very serious FM band. And in just a moment, the Sirius Haydn Quartet will bring you one of his most serious Haydn quartets. Mr. Haydn, as you know, was a very serious composer. And in just a few moments, we will also interrupt our broadcast to interview a very serious lady poet. And for those listeners out there who are serious about their listening, this is listener-sponsored radio. And there's nothing more masochistic than paying for this jazz. And we would like to suggest that you enclose a $10 check and just send it to Masochism Jazz Department, WOR, a very serious listener-sponsored radio. Now we continue our program as we once again salute the very serious people who are our serious listeners. Very serious. You know, you wonder how serious people are. We don't confuse solemnity with seriousness. They are two different things. The solemn people are the least serious of the world. They have something else going. You know, I've often wondered about how much you can actually trust a person as to what he really is up to. Now we assume, for example, that a man who spends all of his life writing a gigantic book about something is really interested in the subject. We do. We really assume that, don't we? We just make an assumption. Well, don't be so sure about that. That motives are one of the most difficult things to ascertain. Did you hear that little news note today about one of the demonstrators? One of the demonstrators was a demonstrator, and these people were chaining themselves to cars and all that. And there was a note where there was a girl, and she was hitting this policeman with a chain. She's beating him with a chain, you see. And then finally, at the end of the news note, they say her father was a policeman. Oh, boy. And of course, everybody assumes that the cause that she's demonstrating for is what she's out there demonstrating for. Wow. Was that a telltale thing? And I'm just curious how many demonstrators of any kind, really, peace demonstrators, for example. I wonder how many of them really are demonstrating for peace. Or are they demonstrating against something else? It has nothing to do with war either, by the way. This is a little thing, you know, just throwing it out there. Of course, very few people are aware of their true motives. That's the serious problem. That a girl beating a cop with a chain really believes she's doing it for freedom. Interesting. Now, she's rarely aware of her actual motives, why she's out there hitting people with chains, policemen, when daddy back home is a cop. It's a very complicated problem, baby, very complicated. And speaking of complicated problems, and as long as... don't put away that serious music. We've got to keep that, because we're living in serious times, and we've got to maintain a certain solemnity, right, friends? I mean, don't you think there's a little bit too much levity? A little too much fooling around in this world. You know what I mean. I mean, Kennedy sits around and talks to Frank Sinatra, and Bertrand Russell writes for Playboy. I think we ought to have some real serious stuff. Come on, bring a little seriousness into it. Come on, bring it up. Oh, my God, bring it up. Don't be hesitant about seriousness. That's life, friends. That's what it's about. That's where we're headed. There it is up there. Infinity. Follow me. It's exciting, isn't it? Let's try that again. Go back to the bottom. It's no fun to bunch up with them. Let's try it. Down. Get down to the bottom of the mountain. Now, here we go. All together now. Form up behind me there. You short guys, get up in front so you can get into the picture. Come on. You short guys are being covered up by the tall guys. Now, you tall guys, move in the back. Now, we're all going. All right, all the chicks form over there on the left there, and the big ones form just a little bit. Give the little ones a chance. All right, now let's go. We're going up the mountain. All right, come on. This is what life is about. Every time they meet a Dairy Queen, they get thrown off the track. Now, come on, will ya? We're going after infinity. You can get the ice cream on the way down. That joint is that. Listen, ice cream is not going out of style. We're going after truth, reality, wisdom, all of it. Now, bring it up again. Come on, let's get them stirred up here. Come on up. Don't sneak it in. You don't sneak infinity into them. Bring it up. It's too late. It's too late. It's all melting. So it's too late. What are you going to do? All I tried to do was to make you rise above yourself out there, sitting on the front seat of that crummy 1949 Mercury with that chick. You can rise above that. Walk, march. Keep your eye. Oh, forget it. It's melting again. It's no use. You know, as long as we're on the subject of the upward and onward department, I got to I got a note, by the way, from the program department. Chucky will not be here this week. No. Well, it's a very terrible thing happened out on the island. Well, I don't want to go into it now. You'll probably read about it in the news sometime during the middle of the week. But he'll be back. We've got insurance against that kind of thing, and they'll spring him. But he'll be back. That's a terrible problem today. I mean, people just don't understand, do they? Have you noticed that? Right, George, you've ever had a feeling that the whole world one day is going to get busted in the hip sense by the fuzz? Have you ever? You'd be surprised how many hippies think of God as that great fuzz in the sky. Yeah, about to bust all of us. Bring a little bit more of that infinity in there. This is the best time. Listen to them horns, son. Oh, that violin. Now that sings the beauty that lies just underneath the surface of the calm, tranquil sea of humanity. Bring it up there. Now that's your soul, see? Now, in just a moment, the fire will enter. Here it's building up now. Here it's coming. Here comes the bullfighter in, you know. It comes. Pow! There it is. Beats up. Oh, that's not girl. Hold it. That's not girl music. Oh, no. Got any girl music in there? Yeah, you got it in there. It's my Chucky. No. That's not girl music either. A far cry from it. Yeah. That's the difference. That's man music. There is such a thing, you know, as a man world and a girl world. There is man food and there's girl food. Oh, yeah. No, girl food, I can almost invariably describe what girl food is. Girl food, they like tuna salad. Funny little stuff like that, you know, little ipsy-pipsy, funny little things, chicken a la king, that's a girl thing. It is, it really is. Things like Jell-O, that's a girl thing. I never knew a man yet who liked Jell-O without being forced into it. Some guys, you know, that literally, it's true, there's girl things and there's man things. All right, now bring in some girl stuff here, there. It is. Look at they love it. Look at them. This is crying out loud. Get out of there. It's crawling all over me. Icky. Oh. Terrible. Yes, siree. Yes, as long as you have that up there, we might as well bring in the... My God, things are breaking. Let's go. For all of you out there who would like to enjoy your vacation to the utmost, WOR brings you its handy hint and kink, its handy aid to vacation, travel, and fun planning. Tonight we salute Hammacher Schlemmler. Hammacher Schlemmler, who this week introduced their covered wagon barbecue, which I'm sure is going to sweep Westchester and Darien the way it should, like a veritable flood. I read to you the copy now from the New York Times of Sunday. Our prairie schooner from Oklahoma that's as practical as it is spectacular, and you can drive it. And more than that, it's a wonderful covered wagon barbecue. Big hooded barbecue, ice compartment, lock storage cabinet, and locking drawer that can be pulled out either side. Sides fold down for dining or serving area. Seat frame holds bottles and glasses. And I know all of you are going to enjoy that side of our barbecue. Complete with stainless steel sauce containers, 2 kerosene lanterns, 2 desert water bags. And that certainly is going to be a lot of fun and start a lot of conversation out there in Babylon. And a set of wonderful cooking irons. Cooking area, lower grill, 19 by 28, upper grill, 11 by 29, priced at an economy, $1,800. The rise and fall of the down, going, sweeping up and down of the Roman Empire Department. It's things like this that they're going to put in, believe me, 1,000 years from now, they're going to talk about people who spent $1,800 on a barbecue grill. It was one of the little straws in the wind there. What was it? Who was the Roman? It was Caligula, wasn't it? He made one of his horses a senator, I think. Well, of course, we've done that. We don't usually put the whole horse in office, but come on now, don't just sit in there. Yeah. have to calm the troops down there. That was a terrible moment for all of us there. Moment of reality. Speaking of reality, have you noticed how many people cannot accept the fact that Sonny Liston is tough? And they don't like to believe that a tough guy can also be a champion. A really tough guy, you know, guy that hits people and breaks down walls. Kicks in the sides of automobiles, that kind of stuff, you know. We kind of course, we live in the Jack Armstrong syndrome all of our life. Somehow, you know what I mean. That we always relate goodness, you know what I mean, by moral goodness with excellence in other fields. Like one of the rottenest guys I ever knew was a great shot putter. Oh, boy, was he rotten. But he could throw that shot put right out of a stadium and 4 miles away, you know. Terrible. It's awful. I remember one time, you know, I thought that good works and honest, reliable, and sober thinking and push-ups would make me a good third baseman. Well, actually, I'll never forget one time a guy came sliding in at me swearing like, well, it's terrible, the things he was saying. He was chewing tobacco. This guy chewed at least 4 pounds of tobacco in a ball game. He did awful things after the game, ladies. He did terrible things. And you know, he used to write awful letters to his mother. That son of a gun, he did all kinds of stuff. This guy smoked cigars with both ears, right out of the ear. You never saw anything like it. And while he was doing it, he was drinking hard brandy through a straw. Had it stuck down in his uniform out in center field. That son of a gun came sliding into me one day, took me off my feet, knocked me 3 rows back of the press box, got up, ran in, scored from, by the way, he was scoring from first on a single, got up, went around the bases twice just to show he could do it before we got the ball back out on the field. He is now in the big leagues. Still as rotten as ever. And I see him once in a while. I'll tell you who he is sometime if you're really interested. Once in a while, I see him now being interviewed by Kiner and those guys. And he looks very nice on television. What they have to do is de-louse him before they put him on. You know, they wring him out, all the tobacco juice and the bourbon and the chicks and the terrible letters he writes home and the swearing. They louse him out, they spray him, put powder on him, you know, and they brush him off and they comb his hair, put him in front of the TV set and they interview him and he goes, Because when all the rottenness is removed, he has nothing to say. And so Kiner says, well, how did you feel about today's game, slugger? He said, well, you look very good out there. Now I'll show you a tape of what you did. And they put a tape. Pow! He hits one. And then it comes back to him. He just sits there with a big lunky look. Well, I remember him coming into third. Terrible, rotten person. So I can definitely accept Sonny Liston as a champion. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because Sonny Liston was the guy all of us were scared of when we were 14 years old living back at the school. And we knew secretly he was not only rotten, but he could hit harder than anybody. You remember? Men understand that. Women don't. Men understand. And it's interesting to note that it's the men that are angry about Sonny Liston far more than the women. Because, you see, the men always hate to see that guy that belted them around when they were back at the school make it. Really make it. See? The women don't. They just cheer. Women have no morals at all. They'll follow right after whoever hits hardest, almost invariably. Nobody wants to believe it. They say, oh, no. Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised. You know, one of the great things that happened to a lot of GIs during the war was to suddenly come upon that realization that women and men really are two different races. And men have all kinds of things going that women do not have, and, of course, vice versa. And I'm talking about philosophical and moral. And so what happened was that 18 million guys would come marching into a little town in Germany, you see, 5 minutes after the German troops have left, and all the chicks are out greeting them. Immediately, they're all out waving from the windows and yelling and hollering. And the guys kept thinking, gee, what would happen if all the Germans were marching through Westchester and we had just left and we're on our way to Ohio? Guess, fellows. Guess, fellows. Just thought you ought to know that there's a lot of things going in this world. Very difficult thing. And of course, you know, to state these things, people automatically think you are anti-woman. Really, it's fascinating. Oh, you're just saying what happened. You know, there it is. I remember, in fact, I think it's very exciting this that way. Makes it what it is. There would be no plays ever written if it were otherwise. You know that? There would be no drama. There would be no conflict in life if it were otherwise. Has it ever occurred to you that if men and women were alike morally, And psychologically, there would be no conflict. None whatsoever. And yet people maintain all the time that they are the same. Especially women. Men never say that. Women do that. The minute I say, hey, fellas, you know what I mean. They say, yeah, man, I know. Women say, what's this nut talking about? Well, men do. I'm sorry, baby, that's just something you'll never know. That is how it is to be a man. You'll never know that. Ever. Isn't that maddening? Isn't it, though? I mean, doesn't it bug you, chicks? Come on, admit it. Come on, doesn't it bug you to know that there's one thing you'll never know, and that is how it is to be a man? You'll never know that, will you? And now they're very mad. See, now in a minute they're going to be saying, no, the rotten bum, what's he saying? I'm not saying anything, Ant. I'm saying, so, this is really pro-woman, you know what I'm saying here. I am conceding the fact that women really are different, and they're what make guys do all the stuff they do. Bad and good, both. Remember that. Women make the guys go to war, too. Although they like to wash their hands of that and say, oh, no. And no, I suspect that it's nature's way of cleaning house. Every 20 years, get all the rubbish, all the garbage, all the rotten marriages that aren't working out, all the chicks that are going with guys they shouldn't be going with, and vice versa. They take them all off to a war for a while and mix it all up again, you know, for a while. It's terrible. It's funny, like sitting in the barracks. I'll never forget sitting in the barracks, and the first wave of Dear John letters arrived. It was like the first ripple in the storm. And everyone thought, oh, that poor son of a gun down at the end of the barracks. There'd be a guy, you know, hiding under his cot, under his mosquito netting, you know. And the first one, everybody says, poor son of a gun. And then all of a sudden you hear, mail call, mail call. And you run out there, you know, you're going to get the letter from Myrtle or from Madge. And you rip it open, you know, and the first line says, instead of saying, Dear Charlie, it says, Dear Charles. And you say, what? It says, I have been doing a lot of thinking. Uh-oh. That means I have been out with this guy from down on the next block with the pimples. It says, I have been doing a lot of thinking lately, and I feel, translated, forget it, Dad. The guy gets up and he walks off slowly in the middle distance, you know, vaguely heading towards the service club. Somehow there is solace in a pool table. You don't know, you know, whatever it is. You just sort of head off in that direction. And when the first great wave came, it came as a great wash of reality over millions of guys who've been brought up on pop songs, or were brought up on popular songs, which are directed mostly at women. Are you aware of that? That almost all of the pop records are bought by teenage girls, not teenage boys, which means that they vibrate to that glop. You know, forever and ever, and my one true love, and da da da. I'll bring that. We ought to have a little of that in there. That's lady stuff. There it is. I will love you forever, my dear. You know, and they just love that. You see, it's kind of self love. That's pretty complicated. You know, we're getting into an issue here that even Albie, in which fears to tread. That you understand, indeed, Emo. I'm afraid so. Oh, well, now, as long as we're on the subject of love, do you know today, friends, we're in 20th century America, I think these things are going to be collected. Do you know that you can buy now a set? These are for guys who have no credit. You know, there's a lot of you guys out there, nobody's going to lend you $300 on your signature only. I know several out there. Well, do you know what you can get now? A set of 20 folding pseudo credit cards that you can unfold out of your wallet. Now, you don't use them, of course. You don't use them. They're just in your wallet. So when you reach in your wallet to take your dollar out that you have left over from last week, when you reach in there, all these credit cards just fold out. And they've got seals. They've got gold things on them. They've got stamps on them and lines. And they say all over it, like credit, special card, press card. It says all kinds of things, you see. And you never mention it. You just close your wallet and stick it back. You can buy that. Seriously. And you can buy a complete set of 20 of them for $1.10, including membership in 2 foreign press associations. Very official. One of them says police on it, just in big letters. Yeah, seriously. And guys, they're not buying them for fun. No, they're not at all. They're not buying for fun. Do you know that during the 20s, there, look at that. There's, I know a guy that's, listen, that's nothing. I have a friend who has a roll that stretches over 34 feet of credit cards. All of them authentic. All of them authentic. In fact, more people than not today measure the amount of love that the world is giving them by the length of the roll of credit cards they've got. You know, that you can unroll. You're a great big thing. You can roll it out and roll it back and reel it in. Oh, speaking of that, do you know that in the 1920s, this is not a new thing. In the 1920s, thousands of men in those days, money was important. Today it's credit cards. Money is very gauche. Oh, yes. It's terrible. I mean, just rotten old dirty money. It's anybody can get money. Hardly anybody can get one of those cards, you know, with Mr. Hilton's name on it, and so that kind of thing, you know. Well, so in those days, plain old money made it. Well, do you know that one of the big industries in the 20s was selling stage money to ordinary guys that had $3, and they would take this big roll of stage money, seriously, a big roll of money, and around it they would put $3 $1 bills, and they'd carry this horse-choking wad in their pocket. And they'd walk around, and you know, when they're popping for Coca-Cola, they whip out this thing, and boom, it bounces like a big wad of dough, and they peel off a buck, and they put it back in their pocket again. That's the truth. More than one guy got slugged over the back of the head, you know. And the guy 4 miles away started to count the take, and it turned to be, lucky bucks. Very difficult. So speak of lucky bucks. Whatever happened to lucky bucks? You remember him? He used to play second base for the Phillies. You remember him? Sure, you remember him? Yeah, he never. He got thrown out of the league. A lot of rotten things about him. Oh well, that's another story. Guys get out of baseball for a lot of reasons, many of which you do not know, and don't care to know. I'd say too, it's getting late. Have you thought that? I think that is true too. Is your life more realistic than it ever was, friend? I think so. I think so, too. You know, speaking of realism, do you know that Waterbury, Connecticut recently did something? Which I'd like to report to you here. Now, I don't know whether I ought to do it. It's Friday, and I'd like to do it, but I don't know whether I should. Because it touches on something that is very near and dear to us, especially on the weekends. Yes. Well, let's put it this way. I doubt whether there is a man jack of you out there who doesn't have around your life a lot of jazz that if you have the guts, you would get rid of. But for one reason or another, you're hanging on to it. Or maybe it's hanging on to you. Do you know that Waterbury, Connecticut recently did it? It declared a day when you could get rid of all the jazz. And nobody wanted to at first. And then one small person came out and did. And then another one came out until finally they all poured out and it became a veritable landslide. Oh, yes. Do you know anything about the concept of neuroses as a contagious disease? Are you aware today that psychologists are working on mass neuroses as a kind of contagious thing? In other words, we think in terms of a person being neurotic. You know, a person being neurotic. Have you ever thought of it being catching? So that a whole nation can become out of its skull, nutty? Yeah. A whole nation goes complete, flipped its lid. A whole nation, it starts with three guys. You know, they pop their cork, you know, three of them. The nation is just like everybody else, you know. A nation, a body of men, is like one man in one way, you see. There are times when you are less susceptible to a contagious disease. There are other times when your resistance is low. Like there are sometimes you're not going to catch a cold. You can be around 50 people, you barking and bellowing around and blowing their nose and your tie and everything, and you don't get a cold, right? There are other times all you got to do is just think of a cold, and the next thing you know, your eyeballs are hanging out, you know, and your head is bouncing on the ceiling and all. All right, your resistance is low. Okay, well, they have made a few observations that the resistance of a nation is low at a certain point. No one knows why, you see. It's low, and it goes off its rocker. It goes completely nutty. Now, I propose something that I think will eventually come about. I say that just like we have doctors who cure individual neuroses, you know, we have a psychoanalyst or a psychiatrist who will work on individual neuroses, eventually there will be men who will be the doctor to a sick country who is completely neurotic. The whole country is nutty, you know, it's all neurotic, the whole country. And I can just see them now working, can't you? Can't you just see that the first true mass psychotherapist who deals with sick nations, they have assembled the entire nation in an enormous square, you know, like those squares that Hitler was always talking to people. They're all there, you know. The entire city of New York is there. And way up on top of a platform that's, say, half the height of the Empire State Building is the gigantic analyst. He's looking down at the whole crowd. Now, remember, everybody's laughing, you see, because the point I have to make here is that you and a crowd are one thing, you at home are another, see? So he's looking down there, and he looks at all of you, and you're all looking up at him. The whole nation is looking up. They're nutty, you see. They believe some nutty thing, like it is chasing them. Or yeah, they believe that it's about to get them, and they're going to have to blow it up first, you see, or some nutty thing like that. So the great mass psychotherapist now, he's looking down at everyone. We're all looking up at him. Our first treatment is about to begin. He looks down. We look up. A gigantic hush falls between us and our doctor. He picks up his microphone, looks from left to right. He is looking at 37 million people. Looks from left, looks from right. Says, "All right now. What is the first thing that you remember? The first thing you remember in your life? All together now. What is the first thing you remember?" And we slowly begin to relax. And we slowly begin to unfold it. And it starts to come out like a great bath of Karo syrup, somehow peopled with strange man-eating bats. And it comes pouring out. "Now, that feeling that you had